Blog Talk Radio.
Brother, break bread with me, brother. Got that pure cake, no butter, no sugar. Asiatic, straight like my brother's soul. Yes, indeed. 7-Up cake, we got pound cake. And we
some of that pound cake.
Yes, indeed, brother. There you go. Thank you, brother. You have a good day today. Salam.
Today I begin a new life. For I am the master of my abilities. And today is going to be a great and beautiful day.
What?
I said, today I begin a new life, for I am the master of my abilities, and today is going to be a great and beautiful day.
Pillows, goose down, $35.
P, you a buyer or a seller?
What? Videos, homie. Videos, DVDs, CDs, Masterpiece, Charlie's Angels.
Look at yourself.
How many millionaires you got on, bruh? I count at least 3.
Man, what the fuck are you talking about?
P, look around, man. You see what I see? I see money. Look at my man over there selling t-shirts. Brother over there selling pods and paper. Cake man over there. Everybody moving, making money. Right? While we standing still being broke. I figured all this shit out, man. All this. This whole world moves forward through transactions. Commerce, nigga. The exchange of goods and services. All the real baller successful folks are sellers. And all the broke-ass people playing catch-up are buyers. I ain't trying to go out like that, Pete. I'm going to be a seller. I'm gonna get my own business. Change the game.
I'm talking about Black Love.
Welcome to the Black Love Experience, hosted by inspiring author S. Dot, exclusively presented by the S. Dot File.
Did you ever look up the word black in a dictionary?
For what?
Did you ever study anything that wasn't part of some con?
What the hell for, man?
Come with me. Black, destitute of light, devoid of color, enveloped in darkness, hence utterly dismal or gloomy, as the future looked black.
Pretty good with them words, ain't you?
Soiled with dirt, foul, sullen, hostile, forbidding, as a black day. Foully or outrageously wicked, as black cruelty, indicating disgrace, dishonor, or culpability. And there's others. Black male, black ball, black guard.
Yeah, well, that's something all right.
Let's look up white. Here. Read.
White. Of the color of pure snow. Reflecting all the rays of the spectrum. The opposite of black. Free from spot or blemish. Innocent. Pure. Huh. Ain't this something? Without evil intent. Harmless. Honest. Square dealing. And honorable. Wait a minute. But this is written by white folks, though, right? I mean, this is white folks' book.
This sure ain't no black man's book.
So what are we reading this one for?
Because the truth is lying there. If you read behind the words, you got to take everything the white man says and use it against him.
Yeah? All right, I mean, you know, there's a whole lot of words in here.
Here, let's start at the beginning. We'll look them up, write them down, and find out what they mean. Here, page 1. The first word, aardvark.
Aardvark, earth pig, African ant-eating mammal, abacus, Chinese calculating instrument. Abaddon, the place of the lost in Sheol, the bottomless pit.
If you take one step toward Allah, will take two steps toward you.
It took a long time to get to this place, and now that I'm here, no one could ever me.
Decisions and other type of legislation and Supreme Court decisions depends upon changing the white man's mind. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad teaches us that our own mind has to be changed. We have to change our mind about ourselves.
In what way?
Well, so he teaches us the importance of moral reformation, a knowledge of self. And for instance, the average so-called Negro, he doesn't think that he can go into business and provide jobs for himself. And because of this, he thinks that he can only get a job from the white man, or he can only get clothes from the white man, or he can only get food from the white man. And we who follow the Honorable Elijah Muhammad are taught that the same thing that the white man has done for himself and his kind, if our people could be wrecked, if we could be cured of our slave mentality that was indoctrinated into us during slavery, we would realize that just as the white man can do these things for himself and his kind, we can get together in unity and harmony and do the same thing for ourselves and our kind. The white man has bred our people, brainwashed the so-called Negro to the point of believing in white supremacy so much that today some Negroes think that they're not making progress or they don't have anything unless they're living in a white neighborhood, unless they have the white man's neighborhood, a seat in the white man's school, or a position on the white man's job, and they even have taken it so far they don't think they're successful in life unless they have a white woman as a wife.
S-Dot has a get-it-done mindset when it comes to achieving. Sharing breakthrough strategies and overcoming solutions for everyday people, he is a communicator of change. S-Dot's most impressive credential is that he keeps it 100 and doesn't water down the whole truth and nothing but the truth. It is this refreshing forthrightness that enables him to speak with a right-now relevance to people from many walks of life. His can't stop, don't stop, won't stop attitude is infectious to those who have experienced this inspiring author, motivational speaker, and empowerment coach that is committed to helping those most in need succeed in love and life.
I'm talking about love.
Welcome to the Black Love Experience, hosted by inspiring author S. Dot, exclusively presented by the S. Dot Files.
Thank you.
It's your man, Ezra, back for another episode of the Black Love Experience. And for many of us, in the 1992 summer, we saw Spike Lee's powerful film, X. And many of us, at the conclusion of that brilliant autobiographical masterpiece, we shouted, "I am Malcolm X." And as Generation X, we adorned ourselves with X fitted caps, T-shirts, plastered our walls with posters, and submerged ourselves on books and tapes of our beloved hero of Black liberation, Minister Malcolm X. Yet, none of us actually had to pick up the mantle or shoulder the burden of actually being Malcolm X. So yesterday, on Thursday, May 9th, 2013, just 10 days before what would have been the 88th birthday of his grandfather, Malcolm Lateef Shabazz was murdered. Was it a coincidence? Some say it wasn't. As we know, inheriting a legacy is a difficult mantle to carry. It is oftentimes a thankless burden with overwhelming expectations and harsh criticism from opinionated outsiders. Those who speculate usually perpetuate an atmosphere of angst and turmoil. Believe Malcolm Lateef Shabazz was born Malcolm X in 1984. He was the first male heir of his grandparents, the Honorable Malik L. Hodge Shabazz and Dr. Betty Shabazz. And as I said yesterday, he was murdered in Tijuana, Mexico. It has been reported that it was a botched robbery, which led to him being thrown off the roof to his death. So on today's show, we want to reflect back on the life of young Malcolm. We want to reflect also on the legacy of Elder Malcolm and the legacy of Dr. Betty Shabazz and the Shabazz family. So for today, call in number is area code 347-308-8527. Call in, share your thoughts, your comments. It's your man, Esther. We'll be back in a minute.
Thank you.
Thank you for sharing your wisdom and your understanding with us, brother. Hopefully, local can implement what you were talking about. I want to ask you, brother, about the legacy of the struggle. I know you got to run into a long and formative lecture, but I want to ask you about the legacy of the struggle, what's going on in the world right now, especially with our young people, and how you see that struggle and that legacy manifested through what you do.
Just to reiterate what I said earlier in the Holy Quran, Surah 20, Ayah 50, it states that our Lord is He who gave all things His creation, and then He Himself guided it. And Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala also reveals to us in the Holy Quran that man is made in toil and struggle, to struggle. So we should never really regret or curse any particular situation or circumstance, but to realize that there are certain obstacles that are placed within our path that should only serve to make us stronger. Just as coal under extreme pressure makes a transformation into diamond, or as others would say, no pain, then no gain. Sorry about that. Yeah.
All right. Brother, so what words of wisdom would you leave with the brothers and sisters in this area, how we can continue the legacy of the movement? What should we be doing, and what should people who are watching this video, who are sitting around watching, going, well, I wish I could do something. I wish we could be doing something. What should they be doing?
Something. Anything.
Anything.
Yeah, just contribute to the cause in any, you know, shape, form, or fashion. You know, whatever you see, you know what issues we're facing. You know what's going on in our communities. And one of the things that the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, said is that, you know, to see an injustice, the weakest form is just to feel it in your heart. You know, the second form is to say something. And the strongest form is to act upon it. You know, just to do something, do anything. You know, just don't sit by idly and just watch things go down. You know, there's an injustice, then you need to at least speak on it if not act on it. But at least act on it. If not, just at least speak on it, you know? So this is what can be done.
Truth Minister Paul Scott, militantmindmilitia.com, here with Brother Malcolm Shabazz. Thank you, brother.
Thank you.
Dad father, so my older sisters say. My mother was the disciplinarian. One time, my older sister tells a story how my father came home and she had misbehaved, so my mother was going to, you know, spank her. And he said, Betty, you know, why are you going to hit them? You know, you can't. You have to talk to them. Talk to them, Betty. And she said, Malcolm, if you don't move, I'm going to hit you. And so he moved. He certainly did. Yes, he did.
My mother would make these homemade oatmeal cookies, and, you know, she said he'd grab a plate of oatmeal cookies and the paper, and we'd go in the den, and we'd watch the evening news and share these cookies.
Well, contrary to popular belief, his attitude towards his family was a very warm one. And although my husband traveled a lot, we had a very close relationship in the sense that whenever he would go away, I could always expect a letter, if not every day, every other day. And I could always expect a phone call.
So when my father passed away, she said that every time I came looking for my father, that she would try and figure out how can I pacify her, because that was really Betty.
And when my children began to, after he's gone for a period of time, they began to ask me different things about him. They draw pictures and write little notes to him, and they're piling up, and I guess when they really start asking about him, I don't really know exactly how to explain to him that he'll never return. I think there's a great emptiness.
And so she would take a plate and she would get the oatmeal cookies and she'd break them in half and she'd leave them by the door. And I just think that that's absolutely, you know, just wonderful and such a testament to her.
She spoke of my father in the present tense. And at first, if you get to know her, you're like, whoa. But he was ever present in our household, his spirit. She would tell us some of the most wonderful stories about him, where we would all just sit, and it was like he was there.
The person you know as Malcolm X is no more.
The assassination of Malcolm X was an unfortunate tragedy. It reveals that there are still numerous people in our nation who have degenerated to the point of expressing dissent through murder, and we haven't learned to disagree without being violently disagreeable.
here, at this final hour, in this quiet place, Harlem has come to bid farewell to one of its brightest hopes, extinguished now and gone from us forever. It is not in the memory of man that this beleaguered, unfortunate, but nonetheless proud community has found a braver, more gallant young champion than this Afro-American who lies before us, unconquered still. I say the word again as he would want me to, Afro-American. Afro-American Malcolm. Malcolm had stopped being Negro years ago. It had become too small, too puny, too weak a word for him. Malcolm was bigger than that. Malcolm had become an Afro-American. And he wanted so desperately that we, that all his people, would become Afro-Americans too. There are those who still consider it their duty, as friends of the Negro people, to tell us to revile him, to flee even from the presence of his memory, to save ourselves by writing him out of the history of our turbulent times. And we will smile. They will say that he is of hate, a fanatic, a racist, who can only bring evil to the cause for which you struggle. And we will answer and say unto them, did you ever talk to Brother Malcolm? Did you ever touch him or have him smile at you? Did you ever really listen to him?
You haven't done the right thing.
Was he ever himself associated with violence or any public disturbance? For if you did, you would know him. And if you knew him, you would know why we must honor him. Malcolm was our manhood, our living black manhood. This was his meaning to his people. And in honoring him, we honor the best in ourselves. However much we may have differed with him or with each other about him and his value as a man, let his going from us serve only to bring us together now. Consigning these mortal remains to earth, the common mother of all, securing the knowledge that what we place in the ground is no more now a man, but a seed, which after the winter of our discontent will come forth again to meet us, and we shall know him then for what he was and is, a prince, our own black shining prince, who didn't hesitate to die because he loved us so.
And so today, May 19th, we celebrate Malcolm X's birthday because he was a great, great Afro-American. And Malcolm X is you, all of you. And you are Malcolm X.
I'm Malcolm X.
As Brother Malcolm said, we declare our rights on this earth to be a man, to be a human being, to be given the rights of a human being, to be respected as a human being in this society, on this earth, in this day, which we intend to bring into existence.
By any means necessary.
Good morning. This is Wake Up Radio with John Legend and the Roots. J. Perry. Wake up.
Let us realize that we don't have to hate as we try to straighten this situation out.
Straighten it out so everybody knows.
Hope of the world is in our generation. It's all left up to us to change this present situation. lesson from our elders. Don't make the same mistake. Let's fill the world with love. Get rid of all the hate.
That's right.
Our elders taught us one thing.
Evers when she was there here in Brooklyn.
and just my fondness for the Shabazz family in general. She spoke to me often about her family, spoke to me about young Malcolm. I remember when he did come to live with her, a group of us sat around and we had some discussions with her outside her office one day, and she was just a phenomenal woman. That being said, I had the privilege of meeting young Malcolm on two occasions. In recent years, I saw him at a speaking engagement, and I met him when he was younger. Very quiet and reserved young man, passionate young man. You could always tell that he was a keen observer of things that were going on around him, very inquisitive, had a quiet demeanor, very reminiscent of his grandfather. And to anyone who knows him and engaged in conversations with him, you know that he was an individual when he submerged himself into any area activity, whether it be productive or counterproductive, he was an individual that went hard. Nonetheless, sorry to see and hear of the passing of young Malcolm Latif Shabazz, who leaves behind two daughters, one of which is 3 years old, and a mother to mourn him, as well as aunts and countless other family members in the Little and Shabazz family. So we're going to go to the line, open it up for folks. Calling number again is 347-308-8527. I got a caller from the 212, last four digits 0236.
Caller? Mahat Hijab, brother man.
Good evening, sis. Good morning, sis. Thank you for calling in.
Yes. First off, I want to extend my condolences to the Shabazz family, and I want to extend condolences to all of us who are Pan-Africanists and who the love of Malcolm through all of the generations, because what has happened today is the younger generations don't realize how much Malcolm, even in his absence, for those of my generation that was right, like maybe one a generation under, so we didn't have the benefit like you to have his presence in the physical, but we had his presence because we listened to his words. And the murder of his grandson has to be connected with the murder of his great-grandfather as well as the murder of his grandfather.
And I would concur on that. I don't think by any stretch of the imagination that any of this is accidental. It is coincidental. It is intentional. And I just think that it's a sad commentary. When I learned of his passing yesterday, and rather than say his passing as if it was a peaceful transition, when I learned of his brutal murder yesterday, I shared it with an individual, and it was interesting to note that this individual, who oftentimes speaks to me about issues in the community and seems to have a passion for trying to do something about the things in the community, and this individual's response was, he killed his grandmother. Not anything else, but he killed his grandmother. And it, you know, brewed some rage in me, and I wanted to respond non-constructively, but then I thought about it, and I recognized that as a people, we are sick. We are afflicted with a deep, abiding sickness, which I call escapism, which is in response to racism, that we practice this anti-blackness against ourselves. And we are very harsh and critical of one another, and we don't use the same level of harsh criticism for folks outside of ourselves. And, you know, I found it rather disheartening, but I also recognized that in that individual, and I said to him, I said, well, if people judge the man that I am today by all my indiscretions as a youth, I would have been killed years ago. And I'm sure if we looked at your life and many of the things that you've done in your life as a youth and even as an adult, you know, it wouldn't be as bright and shiny either. And then he was like, no, but he killed his grandmother. That's unacceptable. And I said, well, if his family members have forgiven him and have moved on with him, and these are his blood relatives, these are individuals who came from Dr. Betty's womb, and if they can forgive him, who in the hell are you to be holding on to a grudge against someone that you never met or you know nothing about, you know?
Well, I would want to add, first off, we have to always open up our energies to not take that story and run with it. There are a lot of dynamics. Dick Gregory speaks about it, you know, behind that. But the other point to that matter of what you're speaking to, I came up, I was a teenager in the late 60s and 70s, okay? Now, when I was coming up, just as ignorant as the folks here today, but what was different about the atmosphere was that the people who were older, who were black nationalists, had a compassion and a love for those of us who were ignorant. We don't have that kind of energy anywhere. If you go to a not-for-profit organization and try to get help, they dehumanize. And everywhere else, we're dehumanized. We have the compassion that used to be in a grassroots setting has just about been annihilated. And if we would if you listen to some of these nationalists that are speaking when they're talking about our young bloods, if the elders would have treated Malcolm like that, where would he have been? If they would have treated George Jackson like that, would we have continued to listen to his message? So we have been programmed. The outer society's disregard for humanity, we have embraced that.
Absolutely.
I was locked one time. The police officers asked me where I was coming from, and I said, none of your business, and they locked me up. And in the police station, they thought that they would bring me down by bringing in a sister who was a crackhead, and I'm telling you, she was torn up down. I hugged that sister. I patted that sister. I made sure they took that sister to the hospital rather than the jail. You understand me? And I asked her, you know, what was going on with her. Of course, she had lost her children. But if you're living in a society where your blackness is everything denigrated, and you take that upon yourself, and then when you have these people who say they have risen above and want to denigrate rather than have compassion, and this is what we have to have. I do not believe anything that they say, even in terms of him hurting his grandmother, I don't believe that at all. Why? Because I am a child of COINTELPRO. And this is why we have to know that white folks allowed COINTELPRO, and now they have the Department of Homeland Security, and we have all been put into it. But as black people, we must always realize we are the tip of that spear of their hatred. This is why they have put Assata Shakur in the forefront, and now they have killed this young warrior. These are psychic wounds that they are inflicting on us.
And I would agree. I want to remind folks that just looking at the examples that we currently have before us, because we don't have to go back 44, 45, 50 years and look at the conditions in which Malcolm faced, the elder Malcolm, we can look at the condition that we're in right now. For those who are observing the news, you know that there is a gentleman from Cleveland, Ohio, by the name of Charles Ramsey, who they dubbed the Cleveland Hero. And this individual supposedly rescued three adult females and one child from captivity, and three white females at that, and they dubbed him a hero. And when they asked him about the incident, he said he knew that one of the victims was in a state of urgency because he saw a pretty little white girl, as he dubbed her, running into the arms of a black man. He knew that there had to be something dire going on. And in response to this, he also said that he also admitted that he had a history of doing incorrect things, particularly in his relationship with his former wife. And he said that his father would not have been happy with him knowing that he went to the bar and he'd gotten brawls and all this other stuff if he would have not done the correct thing and got involved in that behavior. And he said, "I'm the definition of a man." And this outraged the mainstream media, because the last thing that they want is any black male in the role of a savior or the role of an interventionist. So much so, because this individual then turned around and said he didn't want the reward money. He pulled out his paycheck and said, "I work. Give that money to the victims." Now, folks made all sorts of jokes about his physical appearance, particularly folks that look like us, unfortunately, were hypercritical. But what I noticed is the smokinggun.com went and delved into his past and pulled up court documentation in which he was engaged in three domestic violence incidents with his former wife, for which he was convicted for 8 months but spent 6 months in jail. And this speaks a great volume to folks who are paying attention, that it says that even if you put yourself in harm's way and save those who are oppressing you and distressing you, you will still find yourself under fire. And when we look back to 1712, the Meritorious Manumission Act, the basis of that act was in order to get us to betray one another and align ourselves with them, they gave us gifts and rewards if we saved one of our captors, if we created an invention which could benefit our captors economically, or, you know, if we told on one another. And this still goes on today with us. And as you see with the younger Malcolm, he grew up in an environment in which there was no support network in place for him. Many of the folks who should have been embracing him, based on the fact alone that he was the first male heir of his grandfather, abandoned him. It is absolutely ridiculous that this young man had no support network in place, that this young man could have met such a tragic demise in another country, and folks don't have any answers, and folks are just standing around looking baffled. And when he was missing a few months ago, I think about my own Facebook, and I posted for about 2 or 3 days about it. Many folks were just unconcerned. But now that he's actually gone, I noticed the Facebook, all the folks are putting up pictures and talking about how tragic it is. And this is a pathology that we have. We like to mourn dead people, but we don't revere and help living people. So many of us, amongst us, have a reverence for a dead Malcolm, but had no reverence for a living Malcolm. I think it's sad. But that being said, sis, I thank you 100% for calling in and weighing in. I see that we had a caller in the chat room, which was, I know that that was only, that was the ancestors, because the caller in the chat room name was Deborah Jones, and That's actually profound, considering that that's my mother's given name. So I know that that's the ancestors. Go ahead, sister.
Thank you, brother.
Yes. So I want to thank you for calling in. We're coming to the conclusion. I wanted to play another piece on young Malcolm, another interview that he did. This was a few months ago, and I wanted to end on a high note, but I thank you, and I encourage everyone who is listening to the show, you know, to share the show with other folks. You know, you can tweet the link, you can repost the link on Facebook and share it with other folks. Folks who follow the show, know that you can reach out to me at /the S.files on Facebook or Twitter, or you can send me an email at the S.files@gmail.com. That's the best way for you to reach me. So I want to thank each and every person who called in. Those are in the chat room. There were a number of guests. Those who are on the switchboard, it's your man, S.Dot. I thank you. I appreciate you. And to the Shabazz family, I mourn with you. And we're going to leave you with a little more of Malcolm Shabazz.
What are some goals you hope to accomplish in the black community?
What I really stress is the importance of education and unity, and one of my goals is to raise awareness and promote unity amongst people in the black community, those of us who share similar aims and objectives and goals and so forth, just like they have the European Union, where you have nations that don't necessarily get along with each other, like each other, might display some open hostility towards one another. At least they have enough common sense to come together for a common cause and achieve a common goal. So this is something that's important and something that I'm working on within the black community.
Thanks. How many other places have you been spreading the knowledge of black struggle, and do you think it's a success?
I've been, you know, all over the world, alhamdulillah, all over the Middle East, Lebanon, Jordan, Dubai, Qatar, Saudi Arabia. I studied in Syria for about a year. We've been to Libya, me and my comrade, JR, Minister of Information, and along with Cynthia McKinney, who was a former presidential candidate and former congresswoman of Georgia. We all went on a delegation to Libya in support of the African Union, you know, and to promote positive relationships between the Arabs and the Africans. We've been all over the United States, from Gary, Indiana, Detroit, Michigan, Chicago. Sat down with the grandson of Imam Chief Malik, formerly known as Jeff Fort, who started the Black Peace Stones. We have a line with Little Larry Hoover of the Gangster Disciples. We sat down with some of the top generals of the Vice Lords, and T. Rogers of Black Peace Stone Jungle, who is also a very good friend of mine. So this is all around promoting unity. Some of the places we've been, a lot of universities like Temple University, Tennessee State University, Mega Evers, where my grandmother was a college, University of DePaul, Berkeley University, Temple, all over different universities, different alternative high schools, juvenile detention centers, and community-based events like here tonight at this event that has been thrown by the Black Star Action Network.
You think the message that was said here was spread to Tampa Bay, either city locals and youth alike?
Yes, I definitely do. Because, you know, a lot of times people that ask me, they say, well, how can you relate to the youth? Or, you know, when you speak to them, how do they respond? And I think that they respond well, because many times they'll notice that I can actually relate to them. I've went through similar experiences. Like, I don't have all the answers, but, you know, my hardships and my experiences, that's what I have to offer. So I've been through the juvenile detention system. I went through residential treatment centers. I was in prison. So a lot of the hardships that I've experienced, I would want to be able to give back to those who are dealing with similar issues or going through similar experiences, as well as those who might be headed down a similar path. And then, you know, like when we touch down here or we touch down in other places, we're not just coming to talk. We come in a network, you know, and plant them seeds. So now that on behalf of Ajamu Bendeli and the Black Star Action Network bringing us down here, that connection has been made. And when we're gone, it doesn't stop. We have the connection with the brother. We have the connection with the organization, and they're still going to be here, and we're still going to be in touch with them, you know. So, and the brothers, you know, are very sincere, and they come from a similar background. So I'm pretty sure that they're going to keep it going, and we're all going to keep it going.
Thanks. Well, there you have it, Malcolm Shabazz, the great, great, late Malcolm X, Hawk TV. Thank you for watching.
Who taught you, please? Who taught you to hate the texture of your hair? Who taught you to hate the color of your skin to such extent that you bleach to get like the white man? Who taught you to hate the shape of your nose and the shape of your lips? Who taught you to hate yourself from the top of your head to the soles of your feet? Who taught you to hate your own kind? Who taught you to hate the race that you belong to? So much so that you don't want to be around each other. No, before you come asking Mr. Muhammad, does he teach hate, you should ask who yourself, who taught you to hate being what God gave you. We teach you to love the hair that God gave you. Here you way out in the middle of the ocean, can't swim, and you worried about someone that's in the bathtub and can't swim. We don't steal, we don't gamble, we don't lie, and we don't cheat. And that also deprives the government of revenue. Because you can't get into a whiskey bottle without getting past the government seal. You can't open a deck of cards without getting past the government seal. Here's a white man makes the whiskey and then puts you in jail for getting drunk. He sells you the cards and the dice and puts you in jail when he catches you using them. So he's against us because we fix it where he can't catch you anymore. We take the dice out of your hands and the cards out of your hands and the whiskey out of your head. The most disrespected person in America is the black woman. The most unprotected person in America is the black woman. The most neglected person in America is the black woman. And as Muslims, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad teaches us to respect our women and to protect our women. And the only time a Muslim really gets real violent is when someone goes to molest his woman. We will kill you for our woman. I'm making it plain, yes. We will kill you for our woman. We believe that if the white man will do whatever is necessary to see that his woman gets respect and protection, then you and I will never be recognized as men until we stand up like men and place the same penalty over the head of anyone who puts his filthy hands out to put in the direction of our women.
What a lovely, precious dream. Thank you.
open your heart to what I mean, to what I mean. Cause you know, in this whole wide world, there's a million boys and girls who are young.
know you're out there. I can feel you now. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. I'm going to show them a world without you. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you.